Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests such as Dominique Foxworth of The Right Time and insider and fantasy football focus host Field Yates. If you like X's and O's, analytics, probably too much dog talk because Lenny's a dog, then give The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the best part of this weekend and also your stories on getting caught sneaking into stuff. But first, the Los Angeles Rams, Super Bowl champions. This to me was a interesting Super Bowl. I don't think it was a great game per se. Like, I think it was an entertaining game, but I'm not going to be telling my kids about, man, the Super Bowl was just epic. I ain't never seen anything like that. It wasn't that, but it was a good game. It was a good way to spend an afternoon. It was fun. You know, got a whole bunch of commercials. They trying to get y'all up on all that funny money. Y'all peep game on that, right? They are like, yo, you know, who's going to be watching this game? Marks. Marks will be watching all of this game. And so they gave you that. But we now have Matthew Stafford as Super Bowl champion. I feel like we were on the way to getting what we wanted over here on The Right Time, which was Odell Beckham Super Bowl MVP. And then the poor guy seemed to blow his knee out again. The dreaded non-contact injury. That was a bit of a bummer. Watch a little TV before we got out here to record this podcast here this morning. Just wanted to see what people were saying on the network. And I look up and the homie Orlovsky up there in his Matthew freaking Stafford t-shirt. You ain't see that? That's what I gave you over there on different hours. Yeah, he was up there in the Matthew freaking Stafford t-shirt. You know, it's his man's, right? He came through. This is all I'm going to say on the Stafford front, because I ain't trying to hate on the man, because there's no reason to hate on him. He won a Super Bowl. Good for him. However, this was a game where no one like played excellently, at least not on offense. Aaron Donald played excellently on defense, and I would probably say that Aaron Donald should have been the Super Bowl MVP, especially given the way that the game ended. I would lean toward Aaron Donald, the Super Bowl MVP myself. But this isn't a game that I thought had like a real standout performance offensively from anybody. And generally speaking, when that happens, the Super Bowl MVP is the quarterback. Like, you start going through and looking at quarterbacks who have won Super Bowl MVP, go check how many of them legitimately had impressive performances. If a dude is not a quarterback and he's the Super Bowl MVP, that dude balls. Like, I don't think you're really going to find many, if any, exceptions to that rule. They did not make Matthew Stafford Super Bowl MVP. That's no shade to him. I'm just saying that there's no need to overreact to this because of this binary idea that we have about, like, the quarterback is the one who carries everything. The Rams were in this very interesting situation where they were able to get to a Super Bowl 3 years ago with a bum and replaced him with a quarterback that's somewhere between good and very good. And then they won the Super Bowl. Now, I would also make the note that this team isn't the same team as the one 3 years ago. I guess by the time they got to the Super Bowl 3 years ago, the wheels had started coming off of Todd Gurley. But this team did not have a Todd Gurley. You know, I feel like even with Cooper Kupp and having Odell Beckham there, you can make an argument that what is asked of Stafford is definitely more than what was asked of Jared Goff 3 years ago. You know, and I have been a person that has made the point that you're like, oh, they got this far. Well, they did get this far with Jared Goff, right? Like getting this far was not necessarily a testament to the greatness of Matthew Stafford. That wasn't it. But they won, right? And we just can't look at a guy and be like, eh, he played all right. We just can't do that. He played all right. Did he play better than Joe Burrow did? Probably not. Joe Burrow was just back there, you know, running for his life for the majority of the second half. But I don't think Stafford played better than Joe Burrow did. I don't really know what the argument would be that you would make, in fact, that he did, right? Those two picks were both on Stafford. You could try to get it on the dude, like he hit him in the hands, but it wasn't a good pass. The other pick was just obviously just a terrible decision. It was a classically Matthew Stafford sort of move. But Gabe, this is going to get him in the Hall of Fame in all likelihood. This is all it's going to take. He and his one Pro Bowl are going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. I had people hit me up. I, you know, like I say, I'm not doing the tweets, but every now and then I have to check my mentions just to make sure that there's no controversy that's brewing that I'm unaware of. In fact, that happened last week and somebody asked me about it on television. And I was like, ooh, good thing I still go in to make sure, you know, see what y'all popping off about your boy. But anyway, I get on there and I got people, Gabe, you know, they love this one. You owe Matthew Stafford an apology. I want to see what you have to say about Matthew Stafford now. Y'all don't want to talk about the Rams? Like, this game wasn't about the quarterback. In the end, it wasn't about either quarterback. Like, I don't think that people necessarily know what to do when it comes time to talk about a football game that actually isn't about the quarterback. Because there's so many people out there on the field and so many things to do. It's just so much easier for us to go to the idea that, yo, this happened to be about the quarterback. Now, this is probably a lot more about your boy, Mr. Cooper Kupp. Dude, there was a catch. There was a play in the first half. And Cooper Kupp got the ball on the right side, and he got away from somebody. Then he took it back toward the middle. Then I saw him hit somebody. He hit the circle button, right? Hit him with that spin move and came back in the middle. I'm like, oh, man, this dude, the new phenomenon, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, he out here making things happen. Like, if you want to say it's about a dude, it's that. Now, this is what I do want to give Stafford credit for. And I think this is something he absolutely deserves credit for. And it's something that I actually think that he winds up getting criticized for unfairly, right? I push back against the idea when people say that Stafford was up there with the Lions and he didn't have anybody. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, but he did have Calvin Johnson, right? When Calvin Johnson's there, they're like, oh, he didn't have anybody. But you're going to tell me Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Famer, right? Like, you can't link all those things together. But one thing that I think the Stafford critics try to do is say that in his early years, where all he was doing was just throwing the ball to Calvin Johnson. That was probably a pretty good idea. Like, it didn't necessarily mean that he was the most talented person in the world, but that was probably a smart play. Deshaun Watson got to the NFL, and while he was trying to figure out how to play NFL football, he went and did something that he knew would work. He was out there throwing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins whenever he could. It's a pretty good idea, right? You want to get out here and show how cute you are trying to throw the ball to seven different receivers when you only got two or three that are worth a damn, you're going to wind up making a fool of yourself. And so Beckham goes down in this game. Tyler Higbee, the tight end, wasn't playing. The backup tight end on the sideline with a shoulder harness on. Why would we look at anybody else other than Cooper Kupp, right? And I have an appreciation for any quarterback that can really get out there and humble himself and just be like, we're not going to make this more complex than it needs to be. I'm going to throw it to the guy that's most likely to be open on every play and most likely to be the guy to do something after he gets the ball. And you do have to give Stafford credit for that. Even if you don't think it takes the most talent in the world to just keep throwing the ball to who looks like the best receiver in the league, wouldn't everybody do that? They got out there and they basically ran this like an NBA game at the end. It's very similar to what we saw the Patriots do when they had that overtime drive against the Chiefs in 2018. They just split Gronk out wide and were just like, yo, box out, post up, right? Get the ball. Eric Berry can't check you. He's not big enough. And we're just going to walk down the field. That's a very similar thing to how the Rams looked at it. After everybody else was out of there and gone, all right, we got one good receiver. I guess we're going to throw the ball to him all the time, as much as we can. And so you do it. And you get down the field. And with a little bit of assistance from the officials, you get a chance to win the game. I could not believe they called that a holding play on old buddy that was checking Cooper Kupp. I saw Dominique on Get Up, and he was like, basically, they saw a dude wearing number 50 checking Cooper Kupp, and he was doing too good a job of it, so it had to be a flag. Like, that's really what that play then looked like. for you Bengals fans, because I've been told I needed to apologize to y'all also. Hey, man, the Bengals acquitted themselves in that game. Like, this looked like one early and also just generally, you know, looking at the teams or whatever. This is one of those that you look at could be a blowout, and the young team, you can forget that the Rams got guys who have been there before. It's not everybody, but they got dudes on that roster that have been in this place before. It seemed all brand new to all them dudes with Cincinnati. And Joe Burrow, again, even as he is perpetually under siege, got things done, right? Held it together. There seemed to be a measure of confidence. Your boy T. Higgins, he might want to try out for wrestling. It ain't every day you can snatch somebody up by the face mask, throw them into the bench, catch the ball to keep going. Nobody call it. Nobody see it as it happened, right? I don't know if Earl Hebner was the back judge or whatever it was, but that seemed to be shenanigans. Hey, made it happen. Good for you. No shade. There you go. But the Bengals didn't play poorly. Like, the guys who played poorly are the guys who are poor players. Like, I didn't feel like I was looking around at anybody else and just being like, no, y'all didn't get it done. Like, there's reason for them to be optimistic. There's reason for them to feel good. They look less like the Bengals than they have since the year 1990. I understand it sounds like I don't mean that with love. And it's because I don't. But it's not because, like, I got beef with y'all. Way to go. You guys aren't embarrassments anymore. I'm not used to it. You're not used to it. Of course, the way I'm talking, y'all going to come back out here and go like 5-12 next year. It used to be I would say you would go 5-11, but they got one more game in there that you able to lose. But y'all might go 5-12. I don't know, right? But for now, be proud. Be happy. Y'all got that done. That was what was up. Now, Gabe, I got word from somebody who knows things last week to look out if they win the Super Bowl, if the Rams win the Super Bowl, look out for this to be Aaron Donald's last game. And Michelle Tafoya, she mentioned it before the game that retirement is on the table. And I feel like if we hearing right now that retirement's on the table for that dude, retirement is probably going to happen. We also heard coming into the game, Sean McVay talked about this in media availability, about the fact that he might walk away, right? He says he's about to get married. He's got a family. He could probably make $1 zillion doing television. And apparently the great resignation might hit him too, and he might step away from this. If that happens, dude, what are the Rams, right? Like, the whole strategy for the Rams is super duper high-end talent and an excellent coach. If you didn't have the excellent coach and then didn't have probably the best defensive player of his generation, what do you do next? And the answer is, I sit there with my arms folded and say, well, let's see what Matthew Stafford does now. Just so y'all can call me a hater. Sometimes I enjoy that. All right, we got through talking about all that football. Y'all didn't give a damn what I thought about that football game. Y'all ain't thought about that football game since that football game happened, but I know it's a Super Bowl. It's what you got to do. You got to talk about it, whatever it is. I know what it is that y'all came here to talk about, because it's the thing that I came here to talk about. It's the reason that I woke up. It has been a cause that I have championed, one that I have trumpeted for well over a decade. I did this for the people. Finally, the people wound up getting it. And you know why I'm here. I'm here to talk about G-Funk Super Bowl. It was low riders on the field. It was dudes dancing in khaki suits. It was 50 Cent hanging upside down. And as my boy Chase said, looking like Bunk Moylan in a beater. We got that too. It was Kendrick Lamar kicking a new Negro spiritual at the Super Bowl. It was Mary J. Blige singing one of those damn happiness carols at the Super Bowl. It was Dr. Dre saying he's still not loving police at the Super Bowl. It was Snoop basically wearing a head-to-toe designer Crip rag at the Super Bowl. It was Snoop Crip walking at the Super Bowl. It was Eminem doing Lose Yourself and getting the loudest ovation when he stepped out there. Because it was still Super Bowl, right? Like, you know, white folks, deep, stay thing. So was he. But we got that. We got the G-Funk Super Bowl. And it was banging. Like, I don't know. I have to admit, like, you know, guys, I don't like to flex. It's not really my bag. But as I may have told some of you guys not too long ago, I got like a $3,000 amp and some $5,000 speakers, right? Every year, I complain about how the sound for the Super Bowl and for the Battle of the Bands at the Bayou Classic and everything coming through television is always so terrible, right? It never sounds good. And so I don't know what it sounded like to y'all, but to me, we was up in Harlem knocking. It was banging. It was basically about the set list that I told you were probably going to get. I told you to Lose Yourself reaction will wind up being that. I thought Kendrick would do Humble, but instead he actually got all right in there. I didn't expect that. Okay. I heard that Fitty was going to be there to do that. Like, it about went in terms of like what the content itself is going to be as I thought. One thing I can absolutely observe, like I need to look this up. I don't know who's got what, but Dre, I don't feel like I can say Dre doesn't own that Masters for the pre-2001 stuff, but you notice he didn't do anything before the album 2001. Other than California Love, which isn't even actually his song, right? He didn't do none of that. He didn't do G-Thang, right? There's nothing that had any whiff of NWA to it. Didn't even do Keep the Heads Ringing. None of that. Oh, that reminds me. Dr. Dre danced on TV again. I didn't think we'd ever see that after the whole Tango debacle of 1996. But he did that too. But yeah, he didn't do any of that stuff. Like, I thought we was going to get G-Thang. Like, I thought that was no question that we was going to get G-Thang. Because that's like the greatest thing he ever did. I thought we was going to get that. No, we did not get that. It's cool. We got enough of everything else. Now, I was having a discussion before we got out here with my buddy, Mike Ryan. And Mike was saying that anybody who thought that this year's halftime show was better than last year's halftime show, I think he said basically was deaf, dumb, and blind, if that's what they believed. And I realized some of y'all grew up at a time where they always play rap music all over the place, right? Some of y'all grew up in a time where you didn't have people making significant value judgments about you just on the basis of rap music. People my age, I just can't stress this enough. It was surreal to see that this not just accepted as mainstream music, but accepted as something that America could be nostalgic about. Like, I'm sure that you guys were on Twitter finding a small handful of conservatives that had a problem with it just so you could be mad at a time when you should be happy because you're f-ing idiots. But this was, these dudes basically became a piece of Americana. And when you think about it, and what was really hitting me as I was listening to the music as it comes through, because I think the brilliance of Dr. Dre production can really like get lost. Like, the timelessness of this exists. This is what gets me about Dre and what's happened with him and all the music. Some Dre stuff obviously is more hardcore than other Dre stuff, right? Like, it ain't all the same level of gangster. But you wouldn't say that any of those songs that were done at halftime were like smooth. Like, you could make the argument, like, In the Club is obviously an intentional party record or whatever it is, but it ain't watered down. Like, nothing that you got from Dre into mainstream, the stuff that wound up on the radio, sounded like it wasn't a reflection of what the larger catalog was, right? Like, some things are singles, some things are not. But it was all gangster from start to finish. The one time he tried to go not gangster is when he wound up out here doing the Tango, and he decided he wasn't never, ever going to do anything like that ever again. But the idea that some for real deal hardcore rap music was being played at the Super Bowl and America wanted it is wild. And I am just young enough, but still old enough to appreciate the magnitude of what that was. Like, your boy Jay-Z. I mean, I have my criticisms of Jay-Z and making his deal with the NFL, but only because I felt like it spoke to a certain hypocrisy in his get down and the way that he talks about a lot of social stuff and everything else. But in the end, he's an apex predator capitalist, right? Like, that's my issue with him. But people made the argument that, and I guess I may have made the argument at some point, that he's providing the NFL some shield so people won't call them racist. And I don't believe that that's true. At least I'll sit here right now and say that. I may have said it before, but that wasn't going to stop us from thinking the NFL was racist if you thought it in the first place. You just go get a banging halftime show out of it. And what I feel like you got from this was really all you could ask for in truth was a banging halftime show. But who knew that there would be elements of discussion of subversiveness and just how much clout you got based on how much money you got. So Front Office Sports reported that the NFL wanted Dr. Dre to cut the Still Not Loving Police line and that Eminem wanted to kneel a la Kaepernick and that the NFL shut that down. Eminem did kneel, And Dr. Dre did say, still not loving police. Now, the NFL has said that they knew that Eminem was going to kneel and they were okay with it. Comma, however, what were they going to do? What was they going to do? They going to blur him out? Right? Like he came out there and kneeled and they were just going to make it fuzzy? Was that what they were going to do? No. Once he was out there, there wasn't nothing they could do. Because something you can't forget, okay? Like a lot of us never forget it in the first place, but you're not thinking about it properly in this context. Eminem is a really, really, really rich white man. Nobody tells really rich white people what to do. If he decided that he was going to go out there and kneel, then he was going to go out there and kneel, right? The NFL wasn't going to find out about it until after he did it. So, all right, I'm going to tell you a story. I don't know if this story has ever like been put out there, but I'm going to tell it because I've heard it and it's been long enough. I don't feel like I'm violating any confidences here. So when Prince did the Super Bowl in January of 07, as you would expect, the NFL is a little bit worried, right? So Prince is doing the show. And, you know, he had found Jehovah and all of that, but still they a little bit shook and Prince is a bit mischievous. Keeping in mind that Prince showed up to the introductory press conference and my good friend Bill Clashkey started asking the first question and Prince just put on a concert. He started playing the guitar and they went from there. It's the kind of guy he is. So Prince is doing the show and they try to make sure it ain't, you know, too much sex or innuendo or all of that stuff. So there was a part, and you remember, and, you know, in terms of content, it was pretty tame. But you remember that there was a part where they brought a sheet down and Prince was playing behind it. Like it was basically like a shadow of Prince, right? The way the light was shot. And I think he was playing the cymbal guitar. I don't think it was the cloud one, but he's playing the cymbal guitar, but he's got it at his waist and he's pointing it straight out. And there's like some hip thrust action, right? And so you can imagine what I'm talking about. And so somebody was standing next to Raj when that happened. And Raj looked at it and just nodded his head and said, yep, that's a boner. What else could he do? What was they going to do? Send security out there and tackle Prince? Like, once they're on the stage, there's really not much that you can do under those circumstances. So Eminem decide he want to kneel. There's nothing you can do. He can kneel. Now, this is where the money thing really comes into play. When Kendrick did All Right, and it got the line, and we hate Popo, they cut that. Dr. Dre still said, still not loving police. They can't tell Dr. Dre what to do. Kendrick, you know, he got some bread. I'm sure his house is very nice. Probably got a fairly plush automobile, but he ain't in the same place. Dr. Dre shut it down. Kendrick, they bleeped his. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just went there. But it was good, man. It's just wild that it wasn't controversial. Like, I think a lot of people want somebody to find it controversial so you can say those people found it controversial, but it's not. And you know what that tells you more than anything else? Once you demonstrate that you can make some money off of something, all of a sudden it becomes okay. Like, there's certain limitations to it. Like, somebody's out here like, the pornography industry is worth billions of dollars. Yeah, okay, got you, right? There's some lines we're not going to. But the thing to always remember about Dre, NWA, and all that stuff, Dre Outta Compton came out in 1988. Somehow, with no radio and minimal promotion, they sold 2 million copies of that record pretty fast. They were doing these concerts, and it's 80% white people showing up at the shows, right? It was big. And they had to be thinking, well, damn, man, if they're selling all these copies without being on the radio, imagine if they were on the radio. Somebody said, yeah, but we can't put it on the radio. Who says we can't? And then you started seeing a way, and people found a way to get all that stuff on the radio, all that stuff on the MTV. And where Dre was able to do it without a measure of compromise is because they figured out he was making money and they were establishing the idea of the gangster in the mainstream to the point where shortly after, anybody that was critical of the idea of the gangster in the mainstream had their careers destroyed. Look what happened to Public Enemy when they put out the Music and Our Message album. It was destroyed. But those dudes made so much money for so many people that Dr. Dre winds up being ace homies with Jimmy Iovine, and they out here donating money at USC, doing self-produced documentaries on HBO to build the legend up, all of that stuff. Because Dr. Dre did it so cold that they actually change the standards of decency to allow this stuff. They also really don't find that much indecent about the idea of Black people being killed, no matter who does the killing. But it all came together right there. And we got a G-Funk Super Bowl. It ain't all good, but it was damn sure better than the weekend, Mike Ryan. What is wrong with you?
What'd you think about Anderson .Paak making an appearance?
Oh, I forgot Andy was out there. They did have him on the drums. I appreciated that. Just let us see him. You know what I'm saying? I don't have it. Like, that was enough. I mean, I think we could have got a jam out of it, but then they would have brought Bruno out there and they would have been doing some of that mediocrity from the Silk Sonic album. Sorry, I'm at that point. It sounds good. It's conceptually kind of mediocre. The wrong guy was in charge, like I told you from the beginning. If you haven't heard, it's brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from tech.
I'm Brian Chen, a tech columnist for the New York Times. My colleague and I recently wrote a story about how a privacy change by Apple is tormenting internet companies, particularly Facebook, now known as Meta. Last year, Apple released an iPhone software update with a significant change. It gave users the ability to opt out of being tracked online. Basically, when you download a new app and open it for the first time, a window pops up asking whether or not it has a permission to track you. It's been nearly a year since this change was introduced, and about 75% of iPhone users have opted out of tracking. That's huge, and we're finally beginning to see the domino effects. As a result of Apple's change, some small online businesses like beauty supply stores and mail order pastry shops are now struggling. They previously used Meta's tracking technology to find people with certain interests, like people who read articles about baking cookies or putting on makeup, to target them with their ads. Apple's privacy tool crippled Meta's ability to do this type of tracking and targeting, so many small businesses have stopped spending money on advertising because they can no longer cheaply broadcast their ads to potentially new customers. Some of them are even resorting to raising prices on their products. The widespread divestment from advertising is hitting Meta hard. The company estimates that Apple's privacy features could cost it $10 billion this year. That news sent Meta's stock plunging 26% in early February. So here's the big picture. For decades, advertising has been the lifeblood of the internet. Giving away some information about yourself was part of the quid pro quo for getting content and products for free or for cheap. But because of new regulations in Europe related to digital privacy, this business model is being disrupted. And now there's this huge battle happening between tech companies over the future of the internet. Some companies like Apple think we should be able to pay for products with our dollars via subscriptions, app purchases, or simply paying more for some goods. Others, like Google and Meta, think our data should continue to be part of the transaction to keep the internet open and accessible to everyone, not just the wealthy. How is this all going to play out? That's something we're continuing to investigate at the New York Times, so you can follow our coverage to find out more.
So this is something that I thought about as I heard that. How helpful do you find the suggestions on the internet, right? Like the advertising suggestions? Because I think for me, Instagram was probably the only app where you could get me on something that you threw in the timeline that was an advertisement based on some other stuff that I was looking at. And sometimes it would be a cool t-shirt or something else, right? Like it would be something. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I might want to check that out. I often find the ads to just be really annoying because it'll be something I already bought, right? Like all they know is that I went to the site. They don't know that I bought anything from it. And so it doesn't help anything. Why I find it to be useless. But the idea, we think about these changes as affecting Facebook itself as a company. I hadn't really given a lot of thought to the people who use Facebook advertising in order to grow their businesses. And so another question I think that was interesting that was posed there is about Apple thinks that you should pay, you know, you don't have to give up your data, you give up your money. But most people have more data than they have money. Are people, if fully presented transparently with the option, willing to trade that privacy to save the money? Like I asked that as a serious, sincere question, and I don't know. I also wonder, basically, if the world was forced to choose between Apple and Facebook, who are they taking? And it's really just a question about the Apple people, right? Because lots of people don't use Apple products. If you had to choose between one or the other, which would you take? Because I think a significant majority of them would take Apple. Like Apple, if they really wanted just to declare super capitalist war on Facebook and get them out the game, I don't know if they get them out of the game, but they could definitely decimate them in a number of ways. This appearing to be one of them is just regulating this stuff with the advertising. But I do wonder, like, if you did wind up seeing price increases and all this stuff across the board because of this, would you be willing to give up some of your data in the name of it? Because I think my man described it as a quid pro quo. You give up some data to get the stuff, except I don't think it was a quid pro quo. I think it was a quid pro quo in the minds of the tech companies. I don't think most people had truly considered when they got into this endeavor of the internet what it was they were giving up in order to get the stuff for free. I think people were way late. I know I was, right? So maybe, you know, forgive me if I'm projecting, but I think a lot of people were way late in realizing what the exchange was that they were making. And then they pushed back on it. But if they knew, like, if had perfect information from the beginning, I do wonder, would people be willing just to give up the data? And, you know, do they like some of these suggestions that they wind up getting, even though we don't know what the hell else they're doing with it?
All right. This next story comes from Business.
Hi, my name is Juliana Kaplan, and I'm a labor and inequality reporter at Insider. I'm here to talk about a piece I wrote on the Biden administration's new report. This comes from their union task force, which President Biden worked to create last year. They released their first report that's full of recommendations of ways that the country can bolster union membership, worker power, and collective bargaining. One recommendation that the administration is making is that the USDA work towards making cafeteria workers full-time employees rather than part-time employees. Right now, as The Atlantic reported, many cafeteria workers are on, quote, short-hour positions where they don't technically work full-time, so they're not eligible to receive benefits such as health care. And so the report is saying that the Secretary of Agriculture should create requirements to create programs that will help serve the nutritional needs of children. And one of those is working to ensure that their sub-grantees and their contractors have a, quote, stable and high-quality workforce of full-time employees. So essentially, the proposal is to make part-time cafeteria workers full-time employees. Right now, cafeteria workers are one industry where there's really huge labor shortages. Schools are resorting to all sorts of ways to make sure that children are getting fed lunch. And the report says that making these workers full-time will help address staffing issues, for instance, create a stable workforce, and will also allow workers to potentially join a union, increasing union membership. And this is a huge part of President Biden's push to be the most pro-union, pro-labor president that the country has ever seen.
So you telling me them cafeteria workers had to put up with all our childish shit and weren't even full-time employees? Like, you think about this for a second. They ain't getting no tips. You know what I'm saying? And what makes it worse, the one good thing about working at a restaurant, even if you don't like it, is you can get a free plate out the back. Don't nobody want to take that stuff home? Them hours ain't even really like totally conducive to a second job. I mean, I guess they kind of are. Lunch is over by one. But still, I was mortified to find out, especially as I got older and I could realize how terrible we were as people back in the day when we were in school, that these people were dealing with our guff, our back talk, our petty theft, all of those things. And they wasn't even getting no benefits for it. I bet they are having a hard time getting people to come into work during this great resignation. Can you, COVID and everything else, and these kids was already snotty as hell anyway. Like, you know how nasty they were from the very beginning. Oh my God, that's terrible. We should be ashamed of ourselves. I don't know why that really broke my heart. It's like, not like it's terribly surprising, right? Like, this is the way the game goes, but damn, they definitely deserve better. Better than us. Better than y'all's kids. You know your kids are bad. By the time I got to some of them, they were mighty jaded. I do not blame them for being so jaded. But by the time I caught a few, but I'll never forget this, boy. That's the game my daddy and my brother put me on before I got to college. Don't be out here trying to be nice to these people in power. They can't do nothing for you on the day-to-day. You need to be nice to janitors, secretaries, and cafeteria workers. And that's the realest game you can ever give anybody going to college. Remember that.
You can imagine why they're not so happy.
Yeah. Oh, no. I am not risking my life to serve your bad kids terrible food. Hell no.
All right. So this last story comes from Tech. I couldn't get any reporters to join us for it, but it's just too insane to not try and get into the show somehow.
DOJ, the Department of Justice, they found Bitcoin that were stolen during a 2016 hack of the cryptocurrency exchange Bitfinex in the hands of a former Forbes writer
who calls herself the Crocodile of Wall Street and her startup founder husband.
So $3.6 billion, billion with a B. Couples accused of trying to cover their tracks by laundering the stolen funds through a labyrinth of crypto transactions. And it's the department's largest financial seizure ever. So that news broke this past week. People started to pour through this lady's like social posts and stuff like that. They discovered that she is a rapper, by the way.
And her rap name is Razzlicon. Like Genghis Khan, but with a little bit more pizzazz, end quote.
Oh.
Did you happen to hear any of her songs?
All right, so I didn't get around to listen to the songs, though somebody told me they were kind of absurd. The first thing I want to say is, one thing the crypto people are all about in this is, yeah, we need to get our money away from the government. The government should be finding ways to take y'all's money. Y'all notice that, right? Like this whole your wallet. Nobody can get into your wallet and take your money. Uncle Sam apparently be kicking down the door and coming in and getting that stuff. I just want to point that out as a thought for everybody that thought that they had got on this funny money and somehow thought you was going to outsmart Uncle Sam and rush whatever, right? Okay. Past that part. This is from the story, Gabe, that you sent me on this. And I just want to make sure that people hear this. So it's the husband and wife team. So she is the rapper in the game. And I want to hear her husband describes himself as, quote, tech entrepreneur, explorer, and occasional magician, unquote. That's what he said about himself in 2018. Yes. And also the guy calls himself Dutch. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. I try not to be totally dismissive of the funny money because there are things that I understand conceptually. Like I have a problem with the blockchain technology because of the amount of electricity it uses, but I understand it. You know what I mean? Like I get why all that stuff. Like there are elements of this that I get. You just got to ask yourself why this is so attractive to con artists. That's all I'm telling you. It's so attractive to con artists. And every time somebody gets hacked, they're like, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. That should not happen all the time with my money. I just get like, oh, man, it's just one of those things. What do you mean that's just one of those things that happens? That'd be like at the bank. Like, yo, man, something's missing from the vault. Oh, yeah, every now and then money just disappear. I don't know who got it, but don't worry. It'll come back. What? Yeah. And she... Razzlicon. Yeah, that's what she calls herself. Razzlicon. She's rapping like Genghis Khan. Super Bowl also added. It's a lot of late stage capitalist stuff. Did you see the commercial? What was it for Coinbase where all they have is the QR code bouncing around the screen and eventually the site crashed? And y'all really be just pulling out your phones, clicking on them things that just come on the screen? That doesn't sound stupid to you. Ain't been one time there's been one of these things on the screen and I've been like, damn, I got to pull out my phone. Worst come to worst, just Google that shit.
So Netflix has ordered a doc.
Yes.
About them. The director that did Tiger King is going to be the one that's doing it.
Yeah, I saw that. Documentary people move fast, man. Like once one of these stories hits, they get on it and they're like, cool, we'll report it out from here. Like this part is crazy enough that we'll just figure out the rest.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. We put out the topic, the time that you got caught sneaking into something. It came off of your story about sneaking into the Super Bowl last week, which was an excellent story. The ones that we got shared with us, nothing quite as significant as sneaking into the Super Bowl because you can't really top that. Our first one comes from Luther in California. Here it is.
One time I was in college and I didn't have a Costco membership and we had ordered a pizza for the fraternity, like six pizzas. And I was trying to go pick them up, but I didn't get the card from my boy. And this was not a Costco with the food court outside. It was you had to go inside. So I was turned back initially. And I was like, damn, I have to go get this pizza. And the Costco was like 20 minutes away from the school, from our house. And I was like, I have to go back and get this pizza somehow. So I tried to tell them that I was going to get a membership because the pizza was called in already. And they told me, okay, go ahead. The desk is right there. And I was like, all right. And I walked to the desk, and then there's just people. I was like kneeling around, and then I walked to the food court, and I'm in line, and I'm about to tell them my order. I think I'm ready with the pizzas. And then this older gentleman, probably like 50-year-old white dude, he comes up to me and he says, do you have a membership? And I was like, oh man, not on me, but I do. And he is like, we're going to have to call the police. You've tried to enter multiple times. And I'm like, yeah, well, can I just leave? And I have to leave. And I show up back to the frat house, no pizzas, no nothing. Hey, somebody else got to go get it. I don't want to go.
That was called the cops on you for getting into Costco? That feels excessive. Or, you know, maybe a little sizzle.
Getting into Costco without a card, that's like quite the gauntlet.
Yeah, I feel like I can figure that out.
The thing is also, too, is when you get to the food court and you go to pay for your food, you've also got to have your card as well.
Yeah. He's got to start flirting. And maybe the person at the register is not the type of person you flirt with for a number of reasons. Sometimes you got to take one for the team.
All right, this next one, the guy didn't leave his name, but he was from the Bay Area.
So I've got a story about, it's not me, but the homie getting kicked out of a club, man, and it's wild as hell because, mind you, you know, we grew up in the Bay Area, so it's a little different. You don't necessarily have to go out into the nightlife to enjoy yourselves, and I chose to, you know, do other things. So my man, you know, decides to go to the club, and I guess apparently the Yin Yang Twins were in town, so he decided to go check it out. Unfortunately, these establishments require a dress code. And so my man was there with two other females and my other partner. They were trying to get in and were denied access due to the dress code, which included sunglasses at, you know, past 10 p.m., no collared shirt, armored fatigue jacket, et cetera, et cetera. Anywho, apparently a side door was opened and 40 or so people were let in. And yes, he told me he counted. Anywho, I guess the night was going on. It wasn't too long after he gets a couple taps on his shoulder. He tells me, hey, I guess they wanted to talk to me. Management went to holler at me. I was really important. They pull him to the side and tell him, yo, you got to get your black ass out of this establishment. Booted him out completely. Meanwhile, wrong with him, the two females that got in, they were still in the club. He called them all night long. They didn't even pick up, answer the phone or whatever. He's the driver. He ends up leaving them there at the club spot. And I couldn't believe it. My man got kicked out the club and everybody he rode with ended up hanging out without while he was riding home, man.
How about let's talk about the fact that a club at once had the Yin Yang Twins, but also had the nerve to have a dress code. You can't be both. If this is the kind of club that has the Yin Yang Twins as a performer, it's come as you are. Man, I tell you, that reminds me of the time me and my man James snuck in the back door of a lingerie fashion show in L.A. He was kicking him with Bishop Don Magic Wand. I'll tell you that story on another day.
All right, this last one, the guy didn't leave his name, but he's from Bermuda. Here it is.
I love basketball. Me and my crew used to play ball. And some years ago, I was maybe 15, 16, and we found out that Michael Jordan was visiting Bermuda for a golf tournament. And so we found out what hotel he was in. And me and my friends, we rode our motorbikes to go see him. I had a pair of my friend Jordans. I didn't own a pair of Jordans at the time. So I had my friend's Jordans on. We had Chicago Bulls jerseys. Stuck to the hotel. Had to figure out what floor he was on. And then his room. And as soon as we found it, he came out and was like, sorry, we knocked on his door. And he was like, sorry, guys, I'm not here for all that. And hotel security came up and told us we had to leave the hotel. So I don't know how big that was, but that was big for me. And I still remain a fan of Jordan and the Bulls.
I'm glad you ain't get roughed up. Like, you think you're just about to be running up on Mike in the hotel because this don't happen very much down here? You see Mike in Chicago and they do that to you. He'd be there all the time.
And he thought if he borrowed a friend's pair of Jordans.
That'll do it. Yeah, he's never seen that before. Michael Jordan is so numb to that. So totally numb. You know, I don't even think a Michael Jordan tattoo. I mean, ask Chameleon there, right? I paid $10,000 for this jersey. Well, pay me $15,000 and I'll take a picture with you. I guess they kick it different in the islands, I guess. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassain handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Brian Chin of The New York Times. Check out his story on how Apple is tormenting Facebook at newyorktimes.com. And thanks to Juliana Kaplan of Business Insider. Check out her story about school cafeteria workers hoping to become full-time. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.